Okay, here we are. Let's get right into hour number three with Dr. Henry Nyman tonight. This is a story that's not going to go away for a long time. It will continue and continue and continue right on through the election, through the first of the year. Merry Christmas, everyone. Not a Merry Christmas, no. Let's make it, though, individually, uniquely, however we choose to celebrate the holiday. Enjoy it, and let's make the best of it. It's going to be a very difficult one. Governor Cuomo today, as I said earlier, has rejected calls for an investigation into New York's nursing home deaths that he helped instigate with his policy decisions early on. This has been talked about for many months now. Coronavirus may spread much farther than 6 feet in indoor spaces with poor ventilation. Well, we told you that 7 months ago. It's about 17 feet or longer. Depends on the room. Depends on the ambient air. Colleges attempt to impose no parties and no trips because of coronavirus. Those are new rules for this fall, those that are going to open. Unproven, yet fully unproven, coronavirus vaccine. We're assuming the Russian version. The pre-orders are now over 5 billion in a worldwide scramble for vaccine supplies. The New Mexico governor, some call her a tyrant, has decided that she is going to keep all of the draconian coronavirus practices in place permanently in the state, even after the pandemic has moved on. And it will someday. Dr. Sanjay Gupta, why I am not sending my children back to school. In Louisiana, 17 coronavirus cases are linked to outbreaks in Louisiana schools already. Let's see. Florida sheriff bans deputies and visitors from wearing face masks. So you see, the mask debate is still going strong. And it's probably going to continue. Nothing new there. Henry, welcome back. How are you today?
Well, not too bad, Jeff. It's been busy, as you might expect.
Oh, God. Has it?
Numbers are definitely going up. And, I'm not sure how soon it's going away. It's kind of on the rise, especially with the deaths now. It set a record today. It's the highest it's been since spring. It's up to 1,480 deaths today, and that number is likely to get higher. California seems to be lagging, so those numbers are as of 6 o'clock local time. And yesterday, they had quite a few. Yesterday, California ended up with 12,000 cases and 182 deaths. So far today, they have less than half of that. They got 4,906 cases and 95, but that's as of 6:03. They usually update until about 10 o'clock local time. Both of those numbers are likely to rise, and therefore the number of deaths will likely end up being over 1,500 today. So it's getting closer and closer to that 2,000 deaths a day, which is exactly as predicted. Yesterday's total after that California update got up to 1,438 deaths, which was almost the highest it's been. I think the record since spring was 1,449 or so. So yesterday's 1,438 was just shy. Today's has already surpassed it without the latest update from California. So in spite of these high death tallies, Trump did his briefing today. I didn't get all of it. CNN and MSNBC didn't even carry it. I had to find it on Fox. So I missed the beginning, but what I heard was really a rerun. It was, again, kind of being very selective. Trump mentioned numbers going down in Arizona and going down in Florida.
Yeah.
And that was about it. And then he kind of repeated, oh, the only reason we've got more cases is because we do more testing than any country in the world, which is objectively false, that China has done more testing than the U.S. has. And the lead over other countries is not as dramatic as he makes it out. And the per capita number of cases is still higher. So it's not due to testing. We lead in deaths. We're at those numbers are continuing to grow. The Worldometer has the U.S. deaths up to over 169,000 now. It's 169,131. So tomorrow, the U.S. will go over the 170,000 deaths. And like I say, the 200,000 to get another 30,000 deaths should, at the current rate, should only take about 3 weeks. So, sometime in September, should hit the 200,000 deaths. And with the schools opening, I don't think that the 1,500 deaths is going to hold, that it might take till September to see the effect of the spread from the schools to family members, to hospitals, to ICU, to a coffin. In September, October, those death numbers are going to start increasing. It'll go above the 1,500 a day level. It'll get back to the 2,000. It might do that even before the effects from school get there. And, the numbers could easily go up to 2,000-3,000 cases a day. And so, 3,000 cases a day only takes, a half a week to add 10,000, and per month, it can go 40,000 cases and 40,000 deaths, I should say, in a month. So as you said, it does not look good, and as we've discussed, the flu season will probably complicate things.
We're just weeks away from that. Yeah.
Right. And so as far as getting tests done and knowing who to test, it'll get very, very complicated because the numbers will be high for the confirmed cases, and then everybody will assume that they've got COVID when they have symptoms, even if they've got the flu or some other respiratory illness. A few other things on the briefing. Trump introduced Scott Atlas again. He's a frequent commentator on Fox News. He's kind of background in MRI. He's kind of retired from Stanford. He was in neurology department in Stanford. He's an MD, and his specialty is magnetic resonance imaging. So he basically, his specialty is really looking at pictures of brains, essentially, for for various pathologies. It's not in infectious disease, and it's not in public health. And Trump has now replaced, apparently, his scientific task force, at least the ones that show up at the briefings, with this gentleman who he's brought on board. And he actually called him up to speak, and he noted that, yeah, this is a big deal. He's sharing the microphone with him. He doesn't share it with anybody else. This is the only person he's sharing the microphone with. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Atlas really didn't have anything to say. He just said, you know, I just joined the team, and we had some meetings with some educators as far as keeping the schools open or what was needed. And the meetings went well, and, you know, some of them are going to have a hybrid approach, and where some of the students are in class and some are online. And that was it. That's all he said. So it doesn't sound like there were any major revelations from that meeting or his input. The government also issued guidelines for opening schools, which emphasized social distancing and hygiene. Didn't really add a whole lot of information.
Masks, Henry? Masks?
I don't know what they said about masks. I'd have to take a look at it. I would assume they would recommend masks. They've been recommending masks all along. So so they would say to wear masks. That still seems to be an issue in some of these states, particularly in the South. Florida is kind of an interesting case. I guess some of the schools who had closed because they had too many cases, and they were, you know, one of these closed for cleaning type of things, and they were saying that it doesn't look like they're going to be able to reopen because of the number of cases that they had in such a short time period. And they were getting ready to switch over to online only. And I know that was their plan because I heard their plan. And the plan for all of the schools in Florida was that they were going to start out with just online for the first 10 days so that everybody would be acquainted with the procedures and make sure they could, you know, basically access the various sources of the education and be ready to go before, I think the 20th is when they were going to start with in class. And apparently some of the schools decided that they did some screening or somehow they know they've already got a lot of cases and that it really wasn't going to make any sense to do the hybrid, that they would have to just do the online. And the governor says, no, you have to open the schools. You have to offer the classes. And if you don't do that, we're going to cut your funding. We're going to take money away if you're not going to have in-person classes. So, you know, it's hard to kind of figure this out. It's like, at one point they said it's up to the individual school districts and they're going to do what's best, you know, in view of the local situation. And then when the local situation says, doesn't look good, we're going to go ahead and do online until it looks better. They said, no, you can't do that. And so, you know, it's kind of like, you know, if you would look at this from the outside, it would be, you know, they're doing pretty much everything they can do to ensure that things are only going to get worse. and they're concentrating.
That's a very accurate statement. You're right. You're sadly correct. That summed it up.
Yeah. And he's not even satisfied with his own students in Florida. He's now said, well, you know, Trump's saying how bad it is that the Big Ten's going to delay their season till the spring, and the Pac-12's delaying their season for the spring. So the governor of Florida says, come on down. You know, if you guys want to play football and your school's not letting you, you can come to Florida. We'll host the games here. So he's gonna pull in football games from outside of Florida into Florida, which is not a good situation in Florida. Florida has one of the highest rates of infection.
Are they going to try and isolate them in a bubble, so to speak, and let them play all the games in a...
No. Like you said, they're talking about maybe trying to limit parties and do things on campus. No, he's not talking about a bubble. He's just saying, you know, I will. We want to see football. And just come on in. I mean, what kind of bubble are they going to do? They're going to school. I mean, these are college students. These aren't professionals. These are kids that are supposed to be getting an education. And he's saying, well, leave your school and come here to play football. They're not in a bubble. They're there to play a game, and then they're there to go back and travel in between. And
so they're going to, in other words, the profile for the season is the same as always. Inter-school traveling, interstate traveling, all that same old thing. Okay.
Well, that's what he's offering. The schools know better. Mm-hmm. They know that that's idiotic. They know that to take the teams and fly them all over the place is just another way to spread the virus.
Well,
it's a way to get infected. It's a way to infect others. It's not what you do during a pandemic. Most people have enough sense to not fly. And that's why the airline traffic is so low, and why they've cut back flights, because they don't have passengers, because most people aren't that stupid. Only the ones that are going to go and say, well, I got to play football. And they said, you know, we're going to Florida. We're going to fly into Florida and play a game and fly back and see what happens. And so the stupidity is beyond belief. And then apparently some of the schools have a mask optional policy. And so, you know, as I mentioned earlier, we do mask optional. These, you know, students, the high school students, they're subject to peer pressure, and they say, well, no, he's not wearing a mask. She's not wearing a mask. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of hot. I don't want to wear a mask. And you know,
you sound like a college student again, Henry. Very good.
They have a 10%. They had a 10% compliance rate. They got 90% of the kids aren't wearing a mask. And so the virus is going to spread. They cited another school that's got something like 59 positives already, and therefore 900 of the students are at home under quarantine. And
already.
Yeah. And it's the first week of school.
Wow.
And just because they're in quarantine, this means they didn't get infected in the first week. It doesn't mean when they all come back to school again that everybody,
that's right,
you know,
that's
adhered to the quarantine and everybody's now virus free. There's going to be people that are sitting at home under the quarantine, and they're not going to want to sit around in that house all day. They're going to go out and about. They're going to get infected, and they're going to go back to school. And they'll have 59 other ones that are infected, and 900 can go on quarantine again. It's not workable. It's crazy. You cannot put students in a crowded school building and have 90% of them not wearing masks and expect them to stay virus-free. or even to say stay mostly virus-free. Mm-hmm. The virus transmits as easy as flu. And I told you the studies in Pittsburgh with swine flu. Mm-hmm. That 40% of the students were positive based on antibodies in their serum collected before the vaccine was available. And since this was a new virus in a swine, they could develop an assay that would identify the antibodies to swine flu as opposed to antibodies to seasonal flu. And they could determine how many samples mm-hmm. had antibodies to swine flu. And they were just taking serum samples that they had collected for other reasons. It wasn't serum samples from people with symptoms. It was just serum samples from people that were children that went to the hospital or went to the doctor, and they drew blood for whatever reason. They just spun down the blood, looked at the antibody levels, and determined how many were positive. And 40% of the samples were positive. And this was over a short time period. If you recall, with swine flu, the vaccine was available like in December, I believe. And so these would have been samples collected before December, and there weren't that many cases in the spring. Most of the cases didn't happen until the fall. So this 40% positive level was reached in a matter of weeks. It started a little bit early. It started when school started. So people started getting infected in September, and by November, 40% of them had already been infected. They had not only been infected, they had been infected for a long enough time period before the sample was collected so that they had detectable antibodies. Others would have been positive, would have been infected and registered negative because they had been infected too close to the time the samples were collected. Because like I said, they weren't being collected because they had flu symptoms. They were just being collected for various reasons. And even if they had symptoms, they generally aren't going to have detectable antibodies until a few weeks after they're sick. You know, basically the antibody levels take about a month or so to get to a high level. And so that's what happened with swine flu. There's no reason that it's going to be any different with COVID, especially in schools that only have 10% of the students wearing a mask. The virus is going to spread. Once they're in school, they're going to go and decide that, well, they should have a party, they should do this, they should do that.
Well, they're going to be kids in heat. That's what they're going to do.
Right. And it's even worse for sports, especially football, because with football, you've got a lot of players involved. There's a lot of players on the field. There's a lot of players on the bench.
30-35 per team.
There's close contact. Yeah, I mean, with the support personnel, they've got 100 people.
Each contingent. Yeah. Now, we mentioned earlier... You mentioned earlier this flu season, which is coming up. There are new vaccines. As we all know, they make their best guesstimate as to which strains they need to put in the vaccine. And they've got, this year, they've concentrated on H1N1. There's a recombinant-based H1N1 vaccine component, which was updated from an A/Brisbane 2018 H1N1.
Yes.
There's a lot of data in here. You know all this stuff. There's also an H3N2.
Well, just to clarify, most of the vaccines are quadrivalent. So they have...
They
have an H1N1, they have H3N2, and they have two versions of influenza B. So there's four different viruses that are represented in the vaccine.
And right, the B. Victoria and B. Yamagata, those two.
Right. And so all four viruses are in there. It's generally a killed vaccine. So they basically take the same cell. They take the cell from Puerto Rico from the 1930s, and they go and they mix it with the target virus, and then they get them to reassort so that the virus that they actually use in the vaccine has got the H and the N from whatever the target is, and the other 16 gene segments are all from this standard virus they've been using in vaccines for 50 years now. So that virus makes a lot of virus, and some companies grow the virus in eggs. Some companies grow the virus in mammalian. It's MDCK. CK stands for canine kidneys. They're not going out and killing a whole bunch of dogs and harvesting their kidneys so that they can grow the virus. They've got this cell line that they've had for 50 years in the freezer. They take it out of the freezer and grow it up and then use that to grow the virus. And so the virus grows in these kidney cells from canine so that they basically that affects how it is processed. And there are some advantages to growing the virus in mammalian cells. The old-fashioned way is to grow them in chicken eggs, and chicken eggs have to be pathogen-free, so they have special facilities where they raise the chickens and they get the eggs and they inject the eggs with the virus, grow the virus, purify the virus, kill the virus, and make the vaccine. So in any event, They basically look at what it's usually based on what was circulating the prior season, and they kept getting it wrong for influenza B. So instead of trying to guess which of those two they would use, because whichever one they picked, they would usually pick the one that was circulating the season before, and then because people had immunity to that, the other one took over, and so the one they didn't pick became the dominant, so they'd have a lousy match, and they would do that year after year, and they finally gave up and said, well, we'll just put both of them in. So they used two influenza Bs, and then they basically occasionally changed the H1N1 or the H3N2 if they find that the virus is dominant isn't a good match. But it's the
still
same
a guess.
Procedure they
made. It's still a guessing game to a degree.
Right.
And now we're going to have the double onus of having to try to deal with COVID-19 and any number of different influenzas, which fortunately are monobasic cleavage, right? That's what you'd call them, mono rather than poly?
Yeah, they just got one basic amino acid there, so they have a specific protease that goes after that cleavage site, and that protease is pretty much limited to the respiratory tract.
So yeah,
the virus
pulmonary, bronchial, those cells.
Right. So you can grow in your throat and your nose, and on rare occasions it can grow in your lungs and it can cause problems there, but it generally doesn't get out of your
respiratory tract. We're going to have, this is going to be a nightmare. It's already a nightmare, but if we have an active flu season on top of coronavirus, oh my.
Yeah, because it's going to impact, you know, two or three different ways. I mean, one way in the hospital, more people end up being hospitalized. You know, when I talk about the excess deaths, those curves, basically what it is there's based upon historic data, there's a curve that's above, a little above what's expected. And, you know, if it gets above that curve, it falls in the excess deaths. It's above where it should be based upon historic data. But that curve is a wavy curve. That curve peaks in like January. And it peaks with the flu season. The flu does cause deaths, and it does. So there are more deaths in the winter than there are in the summer. And that curve goes up in the winter and down in the summer. And it does the same thing year after year. And the reason it goes up in the winter in part is because there are enough flu deaths that it does make that curve go up higher. And those deaths, you know, generally go in the hospital before they die. So that there's, mm-hmm. you know, there's an impact on the hospitals in general. And when it's a bad flu season, you sometimes end up seeing, you know, hospitals end up setting up tents, you know, temporary facilities to handle the overflow because there's a lot of cases that are being treated in the hospital. So if you have a bad flu season and you can kind of stretch the hospitals to their limits so that they basically have to bring in tents, then you throw COVID on top of that. I mean, right now, most of the COVID, like I say, you can look at this excess death and see that the excess deaths happened when COVID happened. And it wasn't in January. The excess deaths started like in April. And some states that had it bad, in April, it kind of has already come down. And some of those states is actually already going back up again. In other states, like Arizona or Florida or Texas, those numbers didn't go nearly as high in April or May, but now in June and July, those are, you know, they have excess deaths. They're well above that curve. They're at a time when there normally are no excess deaths. Most of the excess deaths are right around January or so. They'll usually get a few weeks, you know, a bad flu season on. Without a bad flu season, they don't have any excess deaths. The number never get above that line. That's a little bit above what they would normally expect. And so if you have a bad flu season, you're already kind of got the hospitals full, then it would be exacerbated by any COVID deaths or any COVID cases. And that's going to tax the hospitals. And the reason it's got the potential of being bad is because the way pandemics usually happen is that the first wave is not as bad as the second and third waves, because the first wave, the virus is adapting. And so it's a hit and miss type thing. It's one area, the other areas are
it's learning the terrain.
Cases,
got it.
Right. And then it's another area. And then by the time the fall comes around, it's already adapted. And then it doesn't hit one area and another area. It hits all of the areas at the same time. So all of a sudden, instead of having, well, we got cases in New York and New Jersey and Connecticut right now, but the rest of the country, not that bad. And now we got in the South, but the Northeast is good. In the fall, there's problems everywhere. So it hits all over the country at the same time. It's not a situation where, well, New York can go ahead and send ventilators down to Florida or out to Texas because they really don't have that many cases now. They had their cases in the springtime, and it's pretty much under control. And all these ventilators they have stocked up, they can lend them out to Michigan or other states. And in the fall, they're all going to have cases. They're all going to need ventilators. And, you know, Trump's talking about how many ventilators he's going to have in storage. And it may sound like a decent number relative to what it was like in the spring, But I'm not confident it's going to be a decent number for what may happen in the fall, because it's going to hit everywhere at the same time. And then it's going to, and then if you have flu on top of that, both of those are going to strain the medical, delivery system. But on top of that, everybody's going to want to be tested, because everybody's going to have symptoms. And a lot of the people have symptoms aren't going to have COVID. They're going to have the flu, or they're going to have some upper respiratory tract, some bug that basically circulates in the winter because people don't have as much resistance. They're inside all the time. It's easier to transmit. And the same reason you have more flu cases, you have more of these other respiratory. And so the whole testing thing is going to be difficult. It's going to be difficult. They're not going to have enough reagents again. They're not going to, the national labs are going to be backlogged. Getting your results in a week to 10 days is essentially useless. And we haven't really done anything. All we've done is hold briefings and say, oh, it looks pretty good to me. Look at it. It's going down in Arizona. It's going down in Florida. And everybody else has trouble. They double their cases. They've gone from, they don't say they've gone from 100 cases to 200 cases, and we've got 50,000 cases. Oh, they've got problems. They doubled their cases in a week or two, and we're getting things under control. And then it's got a whole, list of states that are infected, and picks a couple that it's going down. He says, oh, they're going down in those two. He doesn't say that we had more deaths today than we've had since June. He didn't say they're higher today than they were yesterday, and yesterday was almost the highest we've had since June. It was just shy by 20 cases or so of the record. The record, I think, was 1459, and it was at 1420 something. Today it's up at 1490, and when California gets done, it's going to be over 1500. And he didn't talk about the deaths now. I mean, he talked about the deaths a couple of weeks ago, because a couple of weeks ago, like I said, it was in between. The big outbreaks in the Northeast were calming down, and the outbreaks in the South were hospitalized, but they hadn't died yet. And they were going to die, and that's what they're doing now. So they are dying now from being infected a month ago, and now the deaths are climbing. And they go down over the weekend, or they go down if they basically shut down the testing because there's hurricane warnings in Florida, or they went down in California because they had some processing problem, and so they weren't getting the results, and so it's kind of, Trump's right. If you don't test, you don't have good cases. You don't get confirmed cases. You do get cases. You do get deaths. You just don't have them confirmed that they're COVID until you get caught up on the deaths. And with the cases frequently do just stay low because you don't test the people. If you're not collecting the samples, you're not going to get caught up, because most of these testing sites are at capacity. They go and they shut down at 10 minutes after they open because everybody's in line. It's got all the spaces filled for how many they can process in a day. And they go and say, the day's over. You go home, try again tomorrow, because it's already, 300 in front of you, or whatever that number is. And so there are going to be problems with just something as simple as testing if the flu season actually is a bad season. and impacts.
How are they going to, when they can't even test for coronavirus accurately, abundantly, how are they going to do it with...
They're going to deal with it the same way they did in April, very poorly. People are going to die unnecessarily. Mm-hmm. They're going to have overflows. Healthcare workers are going to get infected. We're not going to know where the virus is. It's just going to be a rerun because nothing has been done other than hold briefings, cherry pick the data, and say, don't worry about it. The fact that we're worse than the world is because we do so much testing, which is just a lie. So it's not going to be better because there's no reason for it to be better. Trump is saying the virus is going to disappear. He's been saying it's going to disappear since, I don't know, March. It was going to disappear in April. It was going to go away in April. Then it was going to go away in June. Yeah, as soon as it gets warm, it's going to go away. And then Arizona has the highest number of cases. In Texas today, they had, I think they got something like a 24% positivity rate. If you've got a 24% positivity rate, that means you're not testing enough. You should be doing enough tests so that only about 5% of the samples are positive. If 25% of the samples are positive, you should be doing 5 times as much testing. And if you do 5 times as much testing, you're going to get 5 times as many cases. So when Texas is out there and saying, you know, we've got 8,000 cases, they really have 40,000 cases. The only reason they got 8,000 cases is because they have limited testing. Mm-hmm. And so that's the level it's at in Texas today. So if they've got 8,000
winter,
and they really have 40,000 cases, they're reporting one number, but the hospitals are seeing another number. They're seeing the people that are sick enough to come into the hospital and get tested. There's probably others that are dying at home because they basically can't get tested and they're afraid to go to the hospital because, you know, there's some people that aren't documented. There's all kind of reasons that people are afraid to go. And there's some that won't get tested because they're not documented. They think if they go on to be tested, they'll be deported. So there's more than is revealed by the testing and the fact that the percentage is so high, and that percentage is higher than it was in New York. So there's a ton of cases in Texas. Trump didn't say anything about Texas today. He talked about Florida and Arizona and California. Texas was, you know, there's nothing really to talk about. And the two that he did talk about that were lower, Florida and Texas and California, that wasn't because the cases were really lower. That's because the testing was lower. Florida was lower because of hurricanes.
California
had some type of processing issue. Yeah.
How many cases approximately to date in the U.S. right now? Approximately. What's the latest case number suspected and confirmed?
The number of cases, according to the Worldometer, right now is 5,360,000. So we're already, according to them anyway, we're already a third of the way to 6 million cases. So we've got a quarter of the world's population. So we've got 5 million. There's about 20 million worldwide.
Quarter of the
world's how many cases?
Positive test result cases. Now, so this is still only, what, 2% of the population. And what my question is, will this virus continue to just work its way through the remainder of the 96% of the population that has yet to be infected and just keep going? Yeah. Or is it going to mutate into a less virile form that won't be as infectious? This is a guess, of course, but what do you think? No, is this going to eventually infect everyone?
The virus, yeah. It's kind of like, have you ever had the flu? Yeah. It's going to be like the flu. It's mm-hmm. a virus that's in the population. It's a pandemic. Yeah. It's not an epidemic. It's not a localized outbreak.
Gotcha. Got
it's
it. Every, Got it.
It's throughout the world. And yeah. and when the virus, and the virus, there's no selection for the virus not being able to replicate as well. There's
right.
selection for the virus to be able to replicate better. So the faster the virus can spread, uh-huh. the more selection pressure is for that virus to become dominant. Now, if there's enough immunity in the population, then the virus is the spreading and causing all the immunity can run into a roadblock where the host have enough immunity so the virus can't really replicate in that host. Then the virus has to mutate to get around that immunity. So basically, then there's selection pressure.
Well,
so
see, virus, where I'm going with this.
The virus is mutating all the time.
Yeah, let me jump in
so
here.
So there's selection pressure,
okay.
then it takes over. Yeah.
What I'm saying here is, I'm just rounding this off, after 90 days, antibodies of people who have had the coronavirus and recovered are essentially gone. That's commonly talked about. All right. If that's the case, then reinfection is a real viability, okay, for most people who've had it. So this virus, as you're saying, is going to become part of the endemic landscape, and it'll just keep right. infecting people like influenza does ad infinitum. It's not going to stop.
Right, right. There is nothing that says this virus is going to stop. The virus is
Ouch.
Already able to transmit efficiently. It's
yeah.
already able to infect a lot of different cell types. And the immune system is complex. You know, the B cells kind of fade away in some people quickly.
Yeah.
But it's not clear if there's T cells that basically have long-term immunity. I mean, there's already been some speculation that there's more immunity out there already. That one of the reasons people end up getting infected but are asymptomatic is mm-hmm. because they've got some type of cross-reacting immunity. So they might have been infected by a cold virus, and they might have developed an immune
sure.
response to that.
Yeah.
And that can cross-react with this because this is a cold virus. This is a beta coronavirus, which is not that common. The cold viruses are more alpha coronaviruses. And so, but there still can be some cross-reactivity. I mean, that's what happened with swine flu. With swine flu, it was very easy to distinguish swine H1N1 from seasonal H1N1. But there was enough cross-reactivity that older people who had been exposed to H1N1 when they were a child and had immunity to H1N1 seasonal flu didn't get as serious a case of swine flu. So the people that ended up in the hospital and ended up dying from swine flu were mostly younger. You know, they were in their 30s and 40s. They weren't in the people over 65. And the reason mm-hmm. it was because people over 65 had long-term immunity to seasonal H1N1, and that gave enough cross-reactivity so that it wasn't they didn't get H1N1. It wasn't enough immunity to prevent them from getting the swine flu. But
right.
they ended up with a milder version of it and then end up dying. Whereas young people that basically grew up with H3N2, and that's what they had good immunity to. They didn't do that well with H1N1, and they ended up in the hospital. And it could be the same thing with this virus. That, you know, some people are going to have some immunity, and they're not going to get that sick, but they still may be transmitting it. And that's what the problem is.
That's right. They could easily be a carrier, sure. Even though they've had it recovered, they can end up being a carrier.
And that's what the issue is with the students in school. You can say, they're not going to get that sick, but they're going to carry it home, and those people are going to get sick, and they're going to spread the virus from home.
This is a nasty virus. Nasty.
So, anyway, we'll see.
Yes.
The prediction is that the numbers will be even higher tomorrow, and we'll have over 1,500 deaths. And,
are you predicting Trump will have another news conference?
Yeah, he keeps saying the same thing over and over again. I mean, I don't know who's going to carry it.
He's going to get it right sooner or later. He's just practicing.
No, he repeats himself. He says the exact same thing over and over
again.
We've got more cases because we test. And this state's doing fine. I'm not talking about the other 40.
All right. Okay. See you tomorrow night, Henry. Thanks.
Okay. Sounds good. Right. Okay. Take care.
Night. All right. Dr. Henry Nyman. Thanks for being here on this Wednesday, and we'll roll into Thursday tomorrow, another busy day. It's just going to be this way from here on out, and you want to watch carefully this posturing that the creeper and the camel are going to be doing. That'll be interesting to see. We will find out. We'll watch. See you tomorrow night. Take care.